would like to start. Obviously, you came through the ranks from Irvindale Speedway, racing the Bandoleros, going to K&N and Xfinity and Trucks. How came everything together leading up to having the first contact to Dennis and 3F Racing, you know, through your experience with Toyota, Chevrolet and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, so my first contact with Dennis really came about kind of a chance moment, really, in the July Daytona race, not Daytona, Atlanta race. They're basically the same at this point. In the July Atlanta race, I was obviously racing in the Xfinity race, and Frida and Paul, his two kids, kind of came over and they wanted pictures with me and they wanted to meet me, and I showed them the car and stuff, and I guess they were fans of mine, and I got to talking with Dennis, and you know, we just kind of kept in touch, kept talking with him throughout the next several months, and you know, I wanted to learn more about what he was doing, and you know, after many you know, dinners, meetings, conversations, you know, we kind of came to the realization, like, hey, this might be something that we need to do, this development deal, and I'm very excited to see what comes of it.
Yeah, especially, I mean, you have this new role within the team, being the director of team and driver development. What does that mean, and how does it schedule your day, you know, from meeting, looking for a next generation driver, obviously yourself just 22 years old. How much is your experience worth for the team, but also for yourself going into this role, which would be a first for you, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, the biggest thing, you know, that I bring to the table to this position is just the fact that I've, you know, been in the driver market before. I've been, you know, racing in the truck and Xfinity series for the last several years. And I'm able to kind of figure out what, you know, what teams need, what teams want. You know, not every team is the same, but at the same time, you know, you got to also know the right things you need to bring to the table as a driver to make it advantageous for them to bring you on. And if I can get with these drivers at a young age and just kind of say, give a little bit of advice or info as to what I did, because I mean, I never thought I'd make it this far. I never thought I'd be racing in two of the top series of NASCAR, but here I am today, with 67 Xfinity starts, and I think I'm at start 5 or 6 in the truck. It's pretty wild to see all that I, myself, and the people around me, you know, we've been able to accomplish. And if I can try and do a little bit of that and give back to those, you know, who are trying to make their way in, I think that's all just as much as important.
Cool. What do you think will be the how will it change you? What will it do with you being in that position? How will it support your development?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing for me is it's another field to have my foot in, right? You know, while I'm kind of known throughout the industry, you know, obviously as a driver, but also being a good marketing person, you know, this is something new for me. This is something where I'm going to have a little bit more, you know, shots to call. You know, I'm going to be able to, you know, work directly with drivers or work directly with teams and stuff, or work directly with Dennis and Paul and find ways to grow the product that we're trying to build here. And so, you know, it's a bit of a new thing for me. It's not going to be easy. There's a lot of things that are, you know, there's a lot of moving parts in anything you do in racing. But I'm very excited to see what this turns into.
Yeah, I guess now you can make more decisions on your own instead of other people make decisions for you.
Yeah. I mean, and that's another thing too, is like, while I do have this role at 3F and I'm able to make these decisions and at least, you know, help influence things that happen internally, I also do still have the freedom to do what I'm doing on the truck and Xfinity side, right? Like, I still have, you know, the support from 3F to go out and go do these races in the truck for On Point Motorsports and Xfinity for whoever. So it's been a very good opportunity that's allowed me to kind of do what I need to do to continue growing as well.
Yeah, and obviously you are not only a real world racing driver, but also a sim racer. And last night you won iRacing race, so congratulations to that. How much is it worth also, you know, with that experience, and how much does it help you growing sim racing? Is it something you just do for switching off, or is it like, okay, I collect this experience and try to influence myself in a positive, and also 3F racing and all the teams you're racing with in a positive way?
Well, the way I see it is it's a new value add-on for my partners. You know, on that virtual race car, I had Lyrgus Security, who's one of my biggest partners this season. You know, they've been on everything from an Xfinity car to, you know, my truck. We have more stuff in the works with them as well. So there's a, you know, if there's any area that you feel that you can bring value to those partners, it's something absolutely worth, you know, looking into. And, you know, as a racer, you know, you want to try and race everything and anything and win in everything and anything. And, you know, on iRacing, there's a little bit less of that inherent risk. There's a little bit of less of that, you know, oh man, if we wreck the car, this is going to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. Like, no, you go into iRacing and, you know, while you can get taken out of the race, you know, you're able to kind of go out there and just hang it out and do what you need to win, and it's fun to go out there and race without those restraints.
Would you say it's a key and crucial element for young drivers to get on sim racing, iRacing, and learning the way to drive? As you mentioned, iRacing is like, if you crash into the wall, you just click reset and can redo it and don't have to fear about the money you could potentially lose.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sim racing, you know, it's a catch-22. You know, there's things that you could do as a driver on there that helps you in real life, but there's a lot of things that you can do on there that hurts you in real life. So it's about trying to know. You have to go, if you're a driver who's using iRacing as a tool to progress and grow as a driver, you need to know what you're looking to get out of it. You can't go in there and say, oh, I just won all these races on iRacing, this means I'm going to be really good in real life. Because everything handles so much different. The cars drive so much different. The tire models are different. The weather is different. You know, the tracks are different. You know, there's only so much you can get out of that. You know, what I use iRacing for is really just so I can get, you know, the visual aspect, you know, get used to, you know, oh, this is what, you know, if I'm driving at, you know, Mid-Ohio this weekend, you know, this is where this corner goes. This is how this goes into here. This is how much brake, you know, this is where I need to start braking for the corner. You know, oh, there's this hill here. There's this bump. There's this tree that I lift at. You know, it's all these little things. I use it mainly for a visual perspective.
To get it, no, like in a rough shape, but not detailed, because
yes,
yeah, it gets you a lot of differences.
Exactly. It gets you to about 80% of what you need.
Interesting.
Yeah, but the last 20% are bigger.
yeah, and exactly.
Obviously, you are with 3F Racing, a Chevrolet team, but also you race mm-hmm. with Toyota. How is the relationship for you as a driver between Chevrolet and Toyota? Are there stuff you can do or can't you do? Or is it like, okay, from both sides, okay, free to go, you're young, collect the experience, and then later on maybe we will catch up and say, okay, now you are definitely just with one make.
Yeah, I mean, for right now, you know, while I've had conversations with people both on the Chevy and Toyota side, you know, I'm not, you know, signed to one manufacturer at the moment. You know, that's why, you know, I have the freedom to do these things. Now, if I was put on a manufacturer program, like a Chevy program, I might not be able to go run a Toyota Tundra or, you know, switch factors. If I was assigned to a Toyota thing, I probably wouldn't be able to go do this 3F thing. So, you know, it's allowed me to kind of do a little bit more, you know, it's allowed me to have that freedom, but at the same time, it is a bit of a disadvantage, you know, not having that manufacturer support. You know, you don't get the simulation time or, you know, time in their gym or with their trainers. So, you know, one day, hopefully I can get on something like that.
But would you say it's also a positive thing that you maybe not on a manufacturer program, especially now with the freedom you have? Because, for example, if Ford says, okay, next week we would like you to race in the Xfinity car for us, you can say, yeah, I'm free to go. I can go and try and, you know, also make a name for myself.
I mean, it's definitely, you know, there's definitely freedom, which is a good thing. But in that same token, you know, when you have support from, you know, a manufacturer, when you have support from a group, you know, you're able to, you know, they're able to help you out with some of these decisions. You know, they take a little bit of that extra pressure on you on how you need to do these things off. But, you know, I'm very excited about what we're doing on the 3F side. I know we're developing our relationship with Chevy pretty well on that side, and I'm excited to see what we can grow over there.
Nice.
So comparing the security from a contract to the freedom you got now, you obviously choose the latter.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice, okay.
And obviously in your role, cycling back in your role as a team and driver developer, last week or a couple of weeks back, Max Mason tested the late model. How would you, you know, pick it up and say what was good at the test, what was bad? How would you sum it up?
Yeah, the test day went great. It was fun. I got to start the day off by doing some shakedown laps in the late model, so that was a lot of fun. But no, it felt great, you know, getting to that was my first real test of kind of working, you know, with a driver and stuff like that. You know, we were also able to work with Michael Falk and Lee Falk from Lee Falk Racing. And they do a phenomenal job of getting, you know, getting into the driver, you know, and really tell them, hey, get on it here, you know, turn in more here, give a little bit more break, you know. And from there, I'm able to go to Max and say, hey, you know what, these are some things I see. These are some things that I did, and this is how it felt. And that was a lot of fun. But, you know, Max, you know, he never ran an oval before this test. And, you know, I could tell, you know, a lot of drivers, when they go from road racing into an oval, they think it's going to be a very easy transition. But, you know, it took Max a couple runs. But once he got it, he did a phenomenal job. He is, you know, he's a young talent. He has a lot of, obviously, he has a lot of maturity and a lot of talent for his age. And I'm excited to see what he does. And I'm very excited to see him get into some oval starts here.
But I guess with all his experience, he has this programmed in his body that the forces you can can use when you turn are another limit for him, because in an oval, obviously, with the banking, you can go really fast and have a lot of excess force.
Another thing for him too was, you know, one of the first things he had to shake was the way you enter a corner. Yeah, on an oval versus a, you know, a road course. On a road course, you lift, heavy brake, and then get off the brake real fast. And, like, you do that all in a straight line. Well, Hickory Motor Speedway has no straight lines. So, you know, that was a big adjustment for him. And that's something that we had to, you know, really work on with him. And once he figured that out, he definitely got up to speed. And he did a really good job adapting. So, I think, you know, in time, he's going to be doing really, really well on the ovals, just as good as he does on the road circuits.
Nice. Yep.
A couple of months back, also Chris Tate, who is also part of 3F Racing, raced, you know, in a super late model for 3F Racing. How would you compare those two drivers, Max and Chris? Or is it too early to say there's really a difference because they're both new to the sport or new to late model and still in the process of learning how to drive the car properly on a short track or later on short track?
I think they're both on the same program, but on different steps of it. You know, Chris Tate, you know, he doesn't have experience in anything. So, you know, he's definitely going to be having to learn a lot of things on the fly. You know, he's going to be learning a lot of things that he doesn't know. And that's fine. You know, that's part of, you know, development. But, you know, with Max Mason, you know, he does know a lot of things. He does have a lot of knowledge about, you know, racing and, you know, how to execute moves and stuff like that. So, but he is having to learn a new style of racing from scratch. So they're both in the same boat, but in different, you know, in different ends of it, I guess you could say. So that's going to be a very unique dynamic, trying to get them both, you know, learning how to make these moves and being ready to attack, you know, once we start getting deeper into races.
What do you think is more easy, to learn it from scratch or to transition into it?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like transitioning into it may be a little better just because you're used to speed. You know, Max, you know, he's 16 years old, but he's already raced on tracks where he's gone well over, you know, 130, 140 miles per hour. So he's used to the speed. You know, when you're someone like Chris Tate, you know, he has to learn, you know, he has to get used to the speed. He has to get used to things going by really fast and catching cars at a high rate of speed or getting caught at a high rate of speed. So, you know, there's a lot of differences there. But I do feel like there is a bit of a advantage as well to Chris Tate because he's not having to unlearn something. That's the difference. Chris Tate just needs to learn something. Max Mason needs to unlearn something and then pick it up and then pick up something new. So it's a unique thing then.
We will see.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously we both were on the podcast of Max. I saw him racing in the Euro-NASCAR. Because I used to work in the Euro-NASCAR for a German team. And you mentioned, I think, that you would like to try one day Euro-NASCAR. Why would you come, you know, to Europe racing on road courses? And what is the, how do I say it, what is the itch to coming to Euro-NASCAR, trying Euro-NASCAR? I mean, you wouldn't be the first driver, Matt Snyder, Jeffrey Earnhardt in the past, Jennifer Jacob.
Yeah, I mean, I want to really badly. I think it's something that, you know, to me, I just have a lot of interest. You know, NASCAR is pretty large over there. You know, the Euro Series tends to bring out huge crowds. You know, the excitement around it's very cool. And, you know, I just have an interest in running anything NASCAR related, stock car related. You know, if I'm able to go out and have an opportunity to, you know, race against some of the best, you know, stock car racing talent in Europe, you know, that would be a phenomenal opportunity for me to go out there and kind of help as well. Help, you know, try and grow the NASCAR product as well. But no, I've had a lot of interest in it. And plus the idea of going overseas to race is just too hard to pass up.
Yeah, you've never done it, huh?
Never done it. I've never been out of the country. So it's something really? That I'd love to do. Yeah.
Even though you have Mexican heritage,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Mexican. Yeah, so my family is of Mexican descent. But I've never been to Mexico, never been to Canada.
Okay.
I mean, if you visit Europe, you could also enjoy the German Autobahn, where there is no speed limit at all.
Oh yes, I've been told many times by Dennis.
It tends to be very stressful, I can tell.
I bet.
Yeah, especially if you are not alone and you have like people in the back, and yeah, you have to take care of them. But it can be a lot of fun too. But as we are burning so fast through these questions, because may I ask, what is your favorite kind of track type? Is it short tracks? Is it road courses, intermediates, super speedways? You said you want to race everything. I get it.
Yeah.
Sure. But preferred?
My preferred type of track is the intermediate in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. In the NASCAR Xfinity Series, I just felt so comfortable on the intermediate style tracks, particularly ones where, you know, momentum is king, but also, you know, where there is off throttle time. So places like Charlotte Motor Speedway or Nashville Super Speedway, you know, those places seem to really fit my driving style. Texas Motor Speedway fit my driving style well. You know, objectively, I don't really care for it. It's been good to me. I have two top tens there for some reason. So, you know, maybe they should just leave it the same.
That balanced rhythm that an intermediate track has, it's not this,
And then, you know, I would say on the truck side, you know, I've really gotten appreciation for the short tracks and the road courses. I really enjoyed running Mid-Ohio and Richmond this past month.
Mm-hmm. All right,
sounds great. Yeah, then last question I would guess is, because I wanted to ask it earlier, is it difficult for you to watch somebody in your car racing, like you had to watch Max and Chris, or is it also pleasant and enjoyable because you maybe see, okay, I'm maybe doing the same error or the same line as he does, and you see, okay, I have to also correct on my side, my line for the future?
Well, you know, the way I see it is I don't look at anything, any of those, you know, opportunities like it's my car. You know, you know, I don't look at it like that. You know, while selfishly as a race car driver, you want to be out there driving as much as possible. You know, secondhandly, you know, opportunities don't come as often and as easy, you know, as they used to. So it's all about trying to maximize the opportunities you get behind the wheel. And, you know, I remember the excitement. I'd be lying to you if I said I wasn't excited, you know, driving that late model, shaking it down. You know, all I did was probably 10 laps of just, you know, foot to the floor, driving the snot out of it. But it was fun, and I had a ton of fun. And then Richmond this past weekend, you know, I'm one of those guys who wears their emotion on their sleeve. We had a really, really good truck this past weekend. And, you know, we had top 15 speed, not saying that we would have finished top 15, but I think realistically, you know, had things, you know, gone the way they should have, instead of us getting spun, we probably would have finished anywhere from 18th to 21st, you know, had nothing else happen to those guys in front of us. We could have maybe stuck a better finish, but, you know, but we got turned, we got spun, and, you know, we ended up finishing 30th. We got put an extra lap down, and that killed our race effectively. And, you know, those moments, it puts it all in perspective, you know, how important every race, how important I need to treat every race, because, you know, I don't race again for another 2 months, as of right now. And I have to sit on that 30th place finish for the next 2 months, which is not fun.
I understand. How do you mentally prepare for a race? You're an emotional guy, and every race is important, of course. So how do you mentally prepare? Do you have some calm before it, or do you, I don't know, listen to metal to get you in the mood?
Yeah. The biggest thing for me is the week of the race, I spend a lot of it, you know, of all things, I like to spend it at the shop. I like to be at the race shop, you know, watching the car get put together or helping put the car together. Mm. You know, for me, you know, just enveloping myself around it, just gets me in the mindset of, you know, this is a normal thing. This is a thing that I need to be doing. This is, you know, this is where I need to be. And, you know, it's really helped, being able to do that, get myself in the mental place to go out and do these races and, you know, be ready to go, as well as, you know, whenever I'm at home, you know, studying footage, you know, taking notes, doing iRacing laps, you know, doing whatever I can to kind of get that repetition in my mind.
And how do you recover from a race? I mean, regardless of how it ends, you are in a other state of mind then.
Yeah. So how do you I just sleep.
Okay.
I sleep as much as I can. I'm a big proponent of a good night's rest.
Yeah.
Everybody deserves a good sleep. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
When will be your next race be? Because you said for the next 2 months you won't race, but what will be your comeback? Yeah, okay, comeback is not the right word, but yeah, next race.
Yeah, so my next race is Talladega.
Really?
In September. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited to we already kind of technically have the paint scheme already out there, but I'm excited to see kind of what adjustments we do to it. And it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm very excited to have this thing out there on the racetrack.
Car and which series are you going to drive?
The Craftsman truck, the number 30 truck with critical path security.
Okay.
No, I wish we got track pass in Germany still. Could watch it.
Oh. In Germany, we don't have it. Is it in the US still available, or did they also kill it in the US?
I must say, it's killed, yeah. That they don't have that anymore. Yeah.
Sometimes. Yeah, I don't get it. They don't have any replacement. We have to definitely not use illegal Twitch streams or something.
Yeah, you definitely don't have to use a VPN.
Yeah, right.
I don't know what it is.
I plead the fifth.
No, Ryan, that would be the wrap up for our interview. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Absolutely.
I got a question.
Go ahead.
Because when Alessandro wrote me, we got an interview, I was texting with my sister. And she said she got a question.
Okay.
She's not a NASCAR fan or something, but she wanted to know at what speed, when you're a guest in the car, someone else is driving, not on a racetrack, but in traffic, or at what speed are you start to get nervous? Or
so you're never. So
are you a good guest in a car? Like,
yeah. Time? So whenever you're driving a car going fast, you're never a guest in it. You can't be, but the minute you become sideways is when you are. That's the best way to put it, especially when you're in a super speedway, because you're at the mercy of everybody else. And I have been T-boned at 170 before, and it's not fun.
I get it. Yeah.
Understandable.
I guess that hurts a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Ryan, thank you very, very much.
Absolutely.